Okay, real quick, we're going to talk about this assessment project, which we did with the state of New Hampshire. It was roughly a three-month project that we completed in June. We're going to talk a little about the scope and background. Then Mike is going to pick up talking about the approach, what we actually did, conclusions that we reached. And in particular, New Hampshire is very interested in sharing as much of this material as possible, particularly with small and rural states for which they feel some affinity. And they actually kicked off a community of practice for small and rural states, which some of you may have participated in some of the calls over the past, 4 or 5 months that they have had calls. I don't know if that community is meeting here at the conference any time, but we very much encourage you to contact folks from the state of New Hampshire. So we started the project back in the early spring. The focus was really on two things that were closely related. They very much wanted an assessment of how their systems stacked up against the emerging FIN2O requirements, but they also wanted a roadmap to help the state move forward, not only for FIN compliance, but also to bring a little more coherence to their approach to system development and support in public health. So the scope of the project was not only a gap analysis for FIN compliance, but also this roadmap to help close the gap. And then also, though, an examination and a look at some very specific systems in a methodology that we'll show you to help think about how they might make advances in some very specific cases. One of the interesting challenges, of course, is that when we were doing this, FIN requirements themselves were somewhat of a moving target. They seem to have settled down as of last week, but as we were proceeding through, that wasn't completely clear. Remember, of course, we had the sort of first generation of FIN requirements that focused on these functional areas, and many states developed and deployed systems to comply with and satisfy these requirements. The FIN2O requirements changed things around a bit, reorganized the material, put the focus much more precisely on the messaging, directory services, on security. And then in introduced more clearly some work in progress on FIN certification in a number of areas. What was important in New Hampshire is that this wasn't just about FIN. They really did want a system architecture that could help them moving forward. Even more specifically, they were facing a state budget request that they knew they had to file for the 2010 budget. So they're already thinking more than a year ahead. And they knew that they needed to present some kind of coherent plan for that state budget, and that they needed to figure out how much they needed to ask for to bring coherence to their systems in not this budget year, but in the next one. So they really wanted a project that would satisfy their FIN requirements, but also allow them to think even more broadly about coherent systems. Not all the FIN requirements received the same focus, some of it having to do with where their Office of Information Technology, the Information Technology Services in New Hampshire are all centralized at the state level. So their Office of Information Technology has a lot to say about standards and about approaches to things. And they had certain strengths that we wanted to leverage. And we wanted to make sure that, again, recognizing that some of these FIN requirements might have changed, that we wanted to be able to to move with them if they moved. Very quickly, if you can see that, our approach once we kicked off the project was to develop purposefully a set of methodologies and tools and teach New Hampshire what the tools were that we were going to use. They were very big on knowledge transfer about the methodology so that they could continue this work without us into the future. And again, they're very interested in sharing that with other states. We conducted a gap analysis. Michael talked about that. Developed a set of options around both systems and infrastructure, presented those requirements, and produced a final report. And then sort of the last intro piece, it was very important that they have a very participative model for how they approach working with all the programs that they work with. So we put this model into place, we've used it elsewhere, and it worked fairly well. So we have a fairly small core team of our HLN staff, key staff at the health department, a set of executive sponsors who are the ones for whom the project is really meant, and they're the ones who have a final authority over what we do and to whom the reports are being presented. A slightly larger work group, which added into the core team, Office of Information Technology folks, and a few program heads, and then really this sort of broader set of staff, more than 40 people all told, who are engaged somewhere in the process of this project, kept up to date on a project website, and we're really sort of in involved at some level throughout. Okay, I'll turn it over to Mike.
Okay. Can you hear me? Okay. Great. So the project, the assessment project that we conducted was really grouped into four distinct phases, starting with a concentrated information gathering effort, really a systems-centric effort by which we interviewed, Noah mentioned, you know, the group of over 40 people. We interviewed staff across the department in a system-centric way, asking questions, you know, what information systems do you use on a daily basis? What are some of your biggest challenges? What systems would you like to have? What systems do you no longer use? Really, to get the whole team thinking about challenges and opportunities in terms of using information systems to meet the public health goals of the department. One of the unique and important parts of this phase was a project website, a place where that whole group of people that you saw on the earlier slide could go and sort of be on the same page to view the information as it's being collected, everything from interview schedules to systems documentation to key findings or preliminary findings as they were developed. I can't emphasize the importance of having a website enough. When you have such a large group of people that are involved in a collaborative project, having a place to go on the web and to view the information as it's being collected is really, we find, the only way that it's possible to keep everyone on the same page. Another unique aspect of this project that Noah mentioned earlier is something that the New Hampshire folks really felt was important, is the idea of having a knowledge transfer. So the idea that an assessment project of this sort should be done on a regular basis, and you shouldn't have to call in consultants every time you want to do it. So it was very important for them to have the consultants train internal staff on the function of the actual assessment project. These phases that I'm talking about here, everything from interview templates to what questions are we asking, how do you perform the gap analysis, the whole methodology of the project. And so that knowledge transfer really happened during this second phase here, which was the phase in which we developed the methodology for performing the gap analysis. So as you've heard, this was an assessment project about FIN compliance and about developing a roadmap towards FIN compliance. So how might a gap analysis be conducted? Well, one way, perhaps the simplest way that you might think is to simply take those FIN 2.0 requirements, look at all of the systems that you've collected through the interview process, and simply evaluate them based on on how well they meet those FIN needs. Now, those of you in the audience who are with health departments, you're probably already familiar with the idea that most systems today in a typical health department aren't FIN 2.0 compliant. So a gap analysis that simply shows you how many systems aren't compliant with those five FIN 2.0 areas is not going to be terribly useful. It might be useful in the sense that it gives you a list of systems, but the usefulness is limited. So what we did was we went back to the executive sponsors and we asked them to articulate for us their vision for the use of information technology in achieving the public health goals. And we took that vision and that led us to a set of principles that we could ultimately use to supplement the gap analysis. So, for example, we might have a system that might not be FIN compliant, might not be FIN 2.0 compliant right now, but how well does that system, or how well could that system fit into an architecture that could help us meet the FIN requirements and those departmental vision and goals in the future? That's how we expanded our gap analysis beyond just the specific FIN 2.0 requirements to a broader set of requirements. And that's sort of consistent with the whole theme behind FIN 2.0 as we move from FIN 1.0 to 2.0 in broadening the scope beyond just emergency preparedness to the larger set of public health functions. So we felt that it was pretty consistent with that. And once we had that set of criteria, we then put together a standard template that we could use in our systems inventory and apply that same template across all the systems that we learned about during that first phase. Okay, so a couple of words about the tool that we built to conduct that inventory. We customized a system inventory application that we had developed earlier, customized it for the state of New Hampshire based on the templates that I mentioned earlier. We made it web-based so that it could be collaboratively used by that whole team. And ultimately, it provided a whole variety of functions for us. Interview tracking, a list of systems, a tool to communicate the results of the gap analysis to the whole team. And really, what it became was something larger in scope, not just for this project, and not just for subsequent projects, but something that the Department of Health intends now to use in an ongoing way to manage IT. So this is something that started out as a limited scope tool to conduct a gap analysis that the folks in New Hampshire realized they didn't have anything like this to sort of keep an inventory of all of their systems in an ongoing way. So the third phase, once the tool was in place, it was relatively easy to conduct the third phase, which was the actual gap analysis itself. We used that web-based system inventory and those standard templates that we developed and walked through the entire set of systems that we learned about in the first phase and literally filled out the templates. Again, the consultants led the process, but because it was a collaborative effort, the core team in New Hampshire worked with us side by side to go through all of the systems. Occasionally, we would revisit interviews to fill in some gaps. And ultimately, we could then use this web-based tool to visualize different opportunities, future systems and systems slated for enhancements, systems that were not compatible with the overall IT architecture of the department, systems that fell within those FIN 1.0 functional areas. Opportunity areas, systems grouped by bureau. Once the data from these templates was in the system, it was very, very easy to visualize and group the different opportunities in different ways. So again, those of you who work in health departments, this might seem familiar to you. A whole variety of systems in a health department, 83 total systems documented. 16 were slated for the future, 4 were under enhancements, 1 was retired, but 46 in those FIN 1.0, those emergency preparedness-centric areas, 27 systems that we categorized as having a low compatibility with the New Hampshire architecture. What does that mean? It means they had 27 Access and FoxPro standalone systems. You know, a fairly typical proliferation of standalone systems that you're probably many of you are already familiar with. These are systems that can be difficult to integrate or interoperate with other systems. They're problem areas. 22 systems identified as opportunity areas. Again, 15 of them in the FIN 1.0 emergency preparedness areas. And then a little wrinkle added some challenge. You know, as with many health departments, a move towards for many systems, a move towards outsourcing the hosting and the operation of mission critical systems. It can solve a lot of problems, but it can also make it difficult once interoperability opportunities are considered. So just another view of our inventory database. The team would frequently log into this database and categorize groups, categorize applications by bureau within the health department, or by hosting model, or by opportunity areas. Some of the ways in which this inventory database application could visualize opportunities for us, I'll just walk through a couple. Hosting configuration, I mentioned the outsourcing of applications, the popularity of the ASP model. You can see across the x-axis here the different divisions in the health department and the number of systems in blue that were in-house versus systems in red that were outsourced. So you can see, you know, in each division in the health department, you know, many of them, a significant number of systems outsourced, which means, you know, again, some advantages but also some loss of control. I talked about architecture compatibility, this idea that a system is compatible with some of the technical standards that are being that are endorsed by the IT folks in the health department. You can see some of those high bars in orange represent low architecture compatibility. Again, many standalone desktop-based systems not part of the enterprise, some of them not part of enterprise disaster recovery scenarios, and so on. These represent challenges for the department. Interoperability potential. I touched on this earlier also. You know, even though a system may not be FIN 2.0 compliant today, based on a set of criteria, what is the potential for that system to become part of an interoperable FIN 2.0 system in the future? And again, you can see we have a number of challenge areas in those orange bars across the different bureaus. And it was based on that information that we went into the fourth phase, which is developing options and recommendations. And this is really about taking all of that information from the earlier gap analysis and from the earlier interviews and revisiting the vision and goals that we heard from the executive sponsors and beginning to establish functional priorities so that we can categorize opportunities. We visualized the different systems opportunities, and I'm going to show you this in a little more detail in a moment, and began to evaluate a set of architecture options. And I'm going to show you a spectrum of interoperability options in just a moment. So the idea of prioritizing opportunities, we went back to FIN 1.0 for some inspiration, and we categorized systems based on functional area. We took many of the old FIN 1.0 functional areas, we added a few functional areas ourselves as part of the team, and then based on, again, the vision and goals from our executive sponsors, we assigned priority to those different functional areas. What that allowed us to do is to add a dimension to visualize not just the potential for a system to meet FIN goals and departmental goals and public health goals, but to also evaluate them based on, I'm sorry, you can't see that, the very, very bottom, evaluate them based on their functional priorities. So I'm going to detach the mic, or maybe I can walk, I can carry. So what that gives us is all of the systems that we evaluated as part of our assessment, we can rate them not just on their potential for meeting the FIN goals and for meeting the departmental goals, but also on their functional priority. And what that gives us is four quadrants. In the upper left, it gives us systems that have high potential, sort of model systems, but that are lower functional priority. Now, as you can see from this graph, nothing was low priority, right? There were no functional areas that were low priority, but there were some that were higher than others. So in our second quadrant, we have lower priority and lower potential. These are the systems that perhaps they don't have a high functional priority, and they're FoxPro or Access sitting on someone's desktop in a basement somewhere. The third quadrant, these are the systems that are more important in terms of our functional priority, but had low potential. So we identify them as problem areas. And then finally, the fourth quadrant, we call these the keystone systems. These are our systems that that are both have high potential and a high functional priority. These are our focus areas for some of the opportunities that we'll be talking about in a moment. And in our systems inventory database, the team in New Hampshire could log in and mouse over these different opportunities and see the systems and click on them and view the interview information and view the template that had been filled out. Now, once we could visualize our opportunity areas in terms of the systems, we could then begin to think about interoperability opportunities between groups of systems. And we think about interoperability in terms of a spectrum. So from left to right, on the left-hand side of the spectrum, we see the need for more on-demand information, real-time. This could be information coming from some of our real-time feeds from our hospitals in terms of disease surveillance. Over to the right side, which is more decision support for benchmarking and quality improvement on a different time scale. And in terms of the applications that meet these needs, often on the left side, we're talking about existing applications, pulling data out of existing applications, frequently in a service-oriented architecture. Moving over to the right side, we're frequently looking more at warehouse applications that consolidate data from a number of existing transaction systems for the purpose of long-term quality improvement. So across this interoperability spectrum, we recognized the need to address interoperability needs across the spectrum. And we came up with an architecture for interoperability that has an integration engine at the hub, at the center, to support standards-based messaging to support the interoperability needs from left to right. As part of our architecture, we also architected a single pathway for data in and out of the department across different systems. We recognize the importance of service-oriented architecture, but also the challenges in terms of adopting such an architecture system-wide. We identified that as a long-term goal. In the meantime, New Hampshire settled on leveraging their data warehouse and rolling out a portal for short-term needs while moving towards service-oriented architecture in the long term. And finally, not forgetting about core requirements in messaging, vocabulary, and security, those core components of FIN 2.0. All new systems that the department adopts need to support these core requirements. A couple of other things, and of course, utilizing the systems inventory database, utilizing web-based collaboration tools, a whole variety of recommendations. So we took that architecture and built a roadmap for New Hampshire to move towards their FIN architecture. The roadmap consisted of three components. First, enhancing existing systems to enable FIN messaging for those three, for those of you familiar with FIN 2.0, those first three certification areas, lead, TB, and varicella, really giving them a practical, achievable set of initial projects on the road towards that recommended architecture. Enhancing their FIN directory and making incremental improvements to their health alert network. This is all about making incremental progress towards a set of overarching goals. Unified messaging, like I had mentioned in the previous slide, and really migrating as many systems as possible into the enterprise and reducing the number of standalone systems that are less capable of participating in that interoperable system that we want to achieve. Continued investment in some successful systems that are in place now, and again, using the system's inventory to help monitor progress along the path. And so finally, this is our last slide. The New Hampshire is now embarking on that roadmap, and they're executing the steps that we mentioned, applying the core requirements to their new acquisitions, leveraging existing access assets wherever possible, remaining flexible and prepared for new opportunities, using that system inventory database, and finally, this is an important piece, participating in emerging health information exchange initiatives, and of course, the national health data standards efforts. Okay. Any questions? Go ahead.
Yes. In your assessment of the for the long-term goal of moving to service-oriented architecture,
yep.
Did you do any finding opportunities for duplicate services for common services?
Sure. So one of the areas of duplicate of services is data pathways between the health department and some of the healthcare providers in the community. So in hospitals, for example, you've got a typical scenario is you've got vital records data coming in through one path. You've got disease surveillance data, ER data, coming in through another path. And so that was, I'd say, one of the key areas of duplicate of services was duplicate messaging and duplicate transports between the health department and hospitals and providers. So, you know, and establishing a single pathway, FinMS based, is a good way to eliminate some duplicate services in that area. Yeah, I would say certainly the executive team, their role in this project was to provide that vision and that guidance for us so that we could establish a set of principles and evaluate systems based on those principles. The executive team didn't have a day-to-day role in the project. That was really the core team.